Hi, Dan.
Hello.
I got my computer back.
Hey, welcome back, computer.
Yay! I mean, all the desk is the same. The microphone's the same. The little USB audio thing is the same.
This would be where I would sing the Welcome Back, Cotter song if I actually knew it, but I don't.
Welcome back.
Yeah, there you go.
You had a spider in your screen. Welcome back.
The lesser known final season of Welcome Back, Cotter, which involved a plot with a spider.
Well, the bugs were all
played
sad
by John Travolta
when you went away. But they took out your screen, and now you're here to stay until the iMac Pro comes.
Oh, yeah, you got suckered into possibly ordering an iMac Pro there, huh?
Yeah, it's Marco. Yeah, Marco did it. He's right. Stupid Marco with his rightness and being right. He's right. I use high-speed storage and lots of processor cores to denoise audio, and the iMac Pro has those. We'll see. We'll see if I come out of the Marco distortion field between now and December. I'm hoping that I'll get one of those to test, and that will be one of the great advantages of being a product reviewer and writer about technology is sometimes you get to try it before you buy it.
Sometimes.
And that can be dangerous, too, because then you can be like, oh, I want it. And then you're, But I'm still kind of thinking that that may be what happens, that I'll either get an iMac upgrade or an iMac Pro, just because I do think that I would benefit from not just the processor cores on the iMac Pro, although I certainly would, but also like I've got the I think I might even mention this last week. I've got the original 5K iMac, and they doubled the SSD bandwidth on the next model. Mm-hmm. And a lot of these giant audio files, the issue is not just the processing of them, but the saving of them back to disk, which takes a long time.
Right. Well, and I ended up, when I was looking at the iMac that I now have, I definitely ended up in one of those scenarios where it's like I was trying to balance that budget conscious versus performance angle. And mm-hmm. ended up in the spot where it's like, look, if I spend $100 more, I can just get the highest end iMac available. Yeah. It's like at that point, when you're spending a couple $1,000s, the percentage increase is like, you might as well. So, like, and I realize not everybody is in a luxury position to be able to do that. But, you know, when you are already considering a multi-$1,000 computer, another $100 generally is not going to break the bank.
Well, and a lot of times it becomes, do you have the money now or not? Because right. like I was reading, Wirecutter posted a link to their story about air purifiers. And the review is fascinating because they say this is the best one. And they measured like power usage as well as efficiency. Mm-hmm. And their backup pick is this one is $100 cheaper. But if you use it over the course of a year, it will use more energy and be more expensive, or 2 years, or whatever it is. And I thought that was a really interesting way to approach it, which is basically spend the money up front if you have it to spend. But a lot of times that's the deal is, well, you can get this cheaper one, but it'll actually cost you more in the long run. Or right. in the case of a computer, you'll need to replace it maybe sooner.
Sure.
But right. if you don't have the money to spend, you don't.
It's you get what you pay for. I mean, and yeah. I think, you know, for me, always the percentage is an interesting way to look about it, because I remember agonizing when I was younger, when I was like in my late teens, early 20s, and I would be looking at buying a new computer. And at that point, you know, buying a new Mac was a expensive
yes.
expenditure, especially if you were a teenager or a 20-something year old, you know, who was, you know, maybe in my case, my parents were helping defray that cost a little bit. But a lot of times I was paying for that out of my own pocket. And I would like put in, like, I would like agonize over the specs and the, you know, customize and all that. And then I would get to the point where it's like, well, and this was in the days before free shipping was omnipresent. And it was like, well, you can pay this much and, you know, cheap price and you'll get it in like a week or two, or you can pay this and you'll get it in 2 days. And, you know, I would agonize over what in the end was a cost of maybe $20 or something like that.
Yeah.
And my father would always just be like, just spend $20.
Yeah.
Like, you'll be happier. You'll get it sooner. You'll be very pleased. And I would like have that weird sort of self-denial thing where I'd be like, no, I shouldn't spend all that extra money. And like, you're already spending $2,000 on a computer. Spend the $20.
Spend the $20. Yeah. Well, the moment that I had that really put this whole thing, this whole kind of idea of spending a little bit more, not losing sight of it. I mean, again, spending, you should always watch your money and be careful. And we definitely do that. I know you do that. But we had a moment when we were putting an offer on a house, this house that I'm sitting in right now. And we knew that it had many offers already. It had like literally been on the market for a couple of days. We knew it was going to have many offers and then it was going to close. And we talked to our real estate agent about it. And in the end, I said, I think we should offer this number that was $5,000 above the asking price. And Lauren looked at me like I was from the moon. She was like, what? Like, do we want to spend above? And what I said, and I had this moment of clarity, I said, if we want this house and we think it's a good deal, in the end, we're spending hundreds of thousands of dollars on this house. An extra $5,000 to get the house we want is not a lot of money. I mean, when you're thinking about buying a house, $5,000 either way, it's really, I mean, $5,000 is a lot of money, don't get me wrong, but when you're buying something that's worth several hundred thousand dollars, $5,000 here or there is not going to make an appreciable difference. And so we bid $5,000 over, we got the house, and we've lived in the house for 18 years. So what I'm saying is,
you amortize it, and it turns out to be very, you know, the amount you got per year.
Right, because I wanted the house, and because in the end, in the grand scheme of things, our mortgage is not particularly different because of that $5,000. And so sometimes that happens. Like, you can make bad buys too, but I guess I think it's an interesting idea of like, if you're going to spend $2,000 or $3,000 on a computer and then pull back at the last $100 because, and the result is you don't get the computer that you actually wanted quite. It's like, maybe you should just, at that point, if you've got that extra $100, maybe you should just spend it at that point. Because you only do this every so often, right?
Instead of, and it's not doing the math between, do I want, you know, a $1,000 MacBook Air and a $3,000, $3,500 MacBook Pro or whatever, right? Like, it's, if you're already, you've made that decision, presumably. Like, you've decided, I'm going to buy the more expensive computer. And at that point, you are talking about details, and the details are cheaper. So at that point, you know, I didn't buy top of the line everything, but I did put in, you know, a 512 gigabyte SSD.
Yep.
I think I did get the top of the line processor, and that was sort of what ended pushing
me over the
edge. And that again, it was not that much more once I'd already decided, you know, I'm going to buy a 27 inch iMac. Really, like, if you wanted to get this, if I was configuring like a base model or the mid-range model for like the RAM and storage options I wanted, then the processor ended up being academic. And that wasn't always the case. It used to be you have to spend a lot of money if you wanted to jump up, because, so, you know, the faster chips were way more expensive. But these days, because chip performance has dropped off a bit, right? You know, we're not constantly pushing the envelope with the latest and greatest chips. You know, I'm running a computer that certainly gigahertz-wise is not... It's fast, you know, it's probably, so I got a 4.2 gigahertz in this, and yeah, that's certainly faster than what I had before, but it's not even twice as fast clock speed wise, right? Like, it's a much newer architecture of chip and all that, but yeah, it's a little different than the heyday of, you know, the late 90s, early 2000s, where clock speeds, you know, it really 18 months, and it was like double what you used to have.
Now, that all said, all these little, I'll pay a little more for this, I'll pay a little more for that, I keep thinking to myself, and that's why Apple makes all the money, right? They're really good at doing that. Although, I was listening to ATP this week, and Syracuse said, you know, his not necessarily like at the time, but it's revealed itself as his buying strategy, which is, you know, buy a really nice computer and then ride it out, you know, and he talks about that Mac Pro that's coming up on 10 years of him having it. But like, it was a high end expensive Mac Pro when he bought it. And as a result, it's still here 10 years later. And that's, you know, I think there is some truth to that. You know, that said, I'm talking about potentially replacing a 3-year-old computer, which is not a huge run, but I'm thinking I will either I will, if there's a place for it, hand this down. I'm not quite sure if my son wants this or not. And it's probably overkill for him anyway, or I'll sell it. Like, I mean, that's the truth of it.
And it's very sellable.
Sell it.
I mean, that's a 3-year-old computer. The resale value on that is pretty solid. Like, I was replacing a 6-year-old iMac and nobody wants that, honestly.
Yeah. Yeah, that's exactly right. With blue lines on the monitor, right?
Yeah. Well, hey, I turned that around. Apple will recycle computers, and they have a partner that does this. And at this point, this was new to me when I realized when I was looking this up, they'll actually pay you for your old computer. Mm. So I got, you know, $150 or whatever. Woo. For turning in a 6-year-old iMac. And it's like, hey, that's way better than nothing.
Yeah.
And as I remind people, that iMac was a work iMac that I did not pay for. So I profited
on that.
That's probably, I hope the IRS isn't listening to this.
Yes. Hello, Agent Jones. Good to hear from
But yeah, I, every time I'm making decisions about buying stuff right now, some of it is also looking forward to what my other possible technology-related expenses are going to be.
Sure.
And right now, like, so for example, I thought Sonos released or announced they are shipping a, you know, an Amazon Echo-enabled Sonos. And I was like, oh, that could be interesting to play around with. And I sort of had to stop and think, like, all right, I know it's $200. It's not, like, hugely expensive. But, you know, I'm looking ahead to a HomePod. I'm looking ahead to an iPhone X, and I'm thinking, well, you know, $200 isn't a lot, but I'm going to spend, you know, over $1,000 on a smartphone and, you know, $350 on a HomePod in the next 3 months or so. Maybe that's something that can wait, and I don't need to, like, invest in that right now because it's not, like, a product that necessarily is crying out for me to have experience with it, especially because I have Echoes that do the Sonos integration already. So it's like, all right, I'm not going to get necessarily a lot out of that that I, you know, can't experience in other ways. And I can save some money in that department that I'm going to put towards things that perhaps will be more compelling to write about.
Right. Yep. The end of the year for people who buy Apple stuff is the, this is the time when that all happens.
But, I was curious. I don't know if this had computed for you yet, but I realized that the pre-orders for the phone, for the iPhone X, happened in late October on the 27th, I think, which is what, 2 weeks from today? Yeah, 2 weeks from today.
Yeah, I'll be at your house.
I know. I was just thinking. So I realized you don't get up at midnight necessarily and order a phone. But we could get up at 3 a.m. and order our phones together. And, you know, we'll see how that goes, because every story that comes out right now is saying that there are fewer and fewer of them that are potentially going to be available. So it's a big question right now. You know, even if you get up at 3 a.m. and order one the first moment they become available, and that is always a crapshoot with the ordering process, they may not show up for God knows how long.
Wow.
So, yeah.
Yeah. Well, that we can experience that together. Won't that be nice?
Yeah, I'd been thinking about sleeping on the couch anyway, so as not to wake up my girlfriend. And then she said, I will sleep through that. And I was like, all right, well, maybe I'll just roll over and order it from the phone on my nightstand.
Yeah. Yeah. Do it via Siri. That'll wake her up.
Yeah. She'll really like that. Yeah, I've done the 3 a.m. ordering thing before, but it's not always. I'm curious to see how it works this year with the upgrade plan, because that, in theory, this year you can now use the upgrade plan and have it delivered rather than having to go into the store. And I'm curious to see if that actually plays out that way.
Apple's got to change that time. That's dumb.
It is dumb. I don't quite. I mean.
It's completely arbitrary.
Yeah, exactly.
And you've got your strongest market. It's at your number one market. It's midnight to 3 a.m. What?
Right. I mean, even if it were midnight Eastern, I would be totally fine with it. Because, like, I can stay up that late. But, like, having to go to bed and get up again, like, that's just dumb. And I understand they want everything in the U.S. to be at the, like, it's the day, right? Like, they say it, you can order it on the 27th, and therefore like sort of the latest point that it could start in the U.S. Although I guess in other places, like in Alaska, can you not, you're ordering it on the day before, right? It's further west.
Sure.
So
yeah,
you're Alaska,
right. Hawaii.
Dumb.
Mm-hmm.
It's dumb.
It's dumb. That's the bottom line. I wonder
Make
if they do it just
nooner.
Because they're afraid that their servers are going to crash
if they do it at
10 a.m. Yeah, that's true. Well, that's the thing, right? They're struggling to keep the servers up at 3 a.m. Eastern. So,
yeah. So, I mean, I guess it could be potentially much worse. And they're really like instilling like, oh, the diehard people will order it. But it just sucks.
Yeah. Interesting entertainment stuff happening this week. I wrote about 3,000 words about Apple's TV stuff, which I've been following pretty closely because we've been also talking about it on my podcast with Tim Goodman. And so we've been talking about it a lot, which has been great because then this the deal with Steven Spielberg's production company and NBC Universal to do Amazing Stories, that was like, I was ready to write thousands of words about that because we've talked it through so many times. So that was interesting. And it's funny. I think it's in the end, I don't think it's going to matter. But the one thing that struck me is that everybody's got a hot take involving Carpool Karaoke and Planet of the Apps. And it's really funny because like that was stuff that they did before they hired professional television executives to buy content, right? Like it is the before time. That is, get all your Eddie Q, what would a television network program by Eddie Q look like jokes out, right? Because that the answer is Planet of the Apps and Carpool Karaoke. Okay, fair enough. But these guys that they hired from Sony are real, you know, they're real TV executives who are going to make deals to do content, and this Steven Spielberg Amazing Stories is like deal one of 15 that they'll make in the next 6 months. People will see it, but everybody's, it's like get one last time, get your 4 months out of date jokes about Planet of the Apps out of the way. But it is telling that at least in a certain sphere, Planet of the Apps is basically the albatross for Apple's video efforts. Like everybody just kind of points and laughs at it, and
It doesn't seem like it did well at all.
No, and it was, it didn't seem like it was any good. And I mean, maybe, I mean, it was an experiment, and Carpool Karaoke is a little bit like that, where they thought it had some synergy with Apple Music and that they could try it out, and it was another thing for them to try. But it's from the before time of when they hired these guys.
They were dabbling, right? Like that's, you know, and I agree with you that Eddie Q, you know, I think Apple has been a company, and we've talked about original content pushes before from Apple and whether or not they should do them. And you know, obviously a ship on that has sailed, they're doing them. But you know, Apple is a company that has long associations with music, and that has always made a lot of sense for them.
Sure.
And they've always showed themselves very on top of sort of, well, not 100%, but like they've been pretty good about figuring out where the direction in music is going. And a lot of that had to do with Steve Jobs, who was very passionate about music.
Sure, exactly.
TV has never seemed like something that they necessarily like love. It seems like they get that it's important, but they don't seem to have that same passion about it. And so you're like you're saying, they went out and hired some people who do, and that is a, you know, a significant mark that they actually are investing in this rather than just being like, yeah, that's also interesting over there.
So my piece was on Six Colors, because I also wrote about it for Macworld, right? Like the day it happened, I said, I got it. Like, let me write that story. That's my column. I love it when a column topic presents itself, right? When I need to write a column, I'm like, I'm on it. Let's do it right now. But on Six Colors, I wrote the 10 burning questions. And, you know, in my inimitable style of like, let me lay out what the possible answers are instead of actually giving you the answers, because nobody knows. I was thinking about this the other day, that the kind of story I rarely write is the, here's what Apple should do, because who am I to tell them what to do? It's more like I always like to frame it as like, here's what Apple could do,
right?
And I'm not prescribing a course of action for them, but let's sift through the possibilities. But I thought maybe here I could provide my my like best shot, like what I think is most likely. And I'm gonna warn everybody. Here's your caveat. I'm not saying these things are more even, I think these are the most likely scenario in my mind. I'm not sure these scenarios are actually greater than 50% even probability. A lot of these, it's like, what do I think is most likely to happen? This one, but I, you know, I'd bet against it happening if the bet was, will this happen or not? Right. But it's the most likely scenario. So, here's my best shot. And I don't think I've done this, like I boiled it down to this, but if I had to like firmly predict, like where will we be in 1 year? And then I'd be interested in your take on whether this makes sense or if you've got a different take on this. Here's what I think is going to happen. It's a standalone service, although maybe there's a bundle. Let's say there's a bundle. If you buy it and Apple Music, they'll give you a deal together. But it's a separate product, separate from Apple Music, that'll cost, you know, it might not be $10, but let's say $10. Some of the services are a little cheaper than that, but Apple is with streaming, is basically going with the flow. So let's say $10. It'll have a 90-day trial. At least for a while, if not forever. It's going to have some original movies as well as some original series that are going to debut in 2018, and it'll have a back catalog of some material that they've licensed, whether it's just like a bunch of old dramas and sitcoms or whether it's something from a particular, you know, genre or something. I don't know, but I think they'll put some extra stuff in there too. Maybe it's just movies, a little back catalog of movies or something. And if I'm going to pick, like, the big questions are like the name and whether it's available on non-Apple hardware. And I'm going to say it's more likely than not that it'll be only on Apple stuff. It won't be available on other streamer boxes. Might be available on Android, but I would say probably not, but definitely not on Amazon Fire TV and Roku in my little scenario here. And as for its name, I got to say, I'm kind of warming up to them calling it Apple TV. And kind of retroactively transforming the Apple TV box into the conveyor of the Apple TV service. As weird as that sounds, it's the best name, I think. I think it really is the best name. Rather than calling it Apple Play or Apple Stream or Apple Broadcast or Apple Live or Apple Direct or something like that, just calling it Apple TV. It plays in the TV app on your Apple TV. That's box, Apple TV box, let's say. I don't know. That's my best shot. If I had to be down to specifics, and it won't launch until, like, let's say late summer next year, or maybe even like fall next year, because
I would think fall,
because it takes a very long time to make television.
I think they would announce it in the summer.
Yeah, maybe WWDC announcement, and then it launches in October, something like that.
I think that's right. I think you are probably spot on with a lot of this. It's hard to, every time you try to predict and make your best guess and think about how this could go down. And as always, whenever they end up announcing something, a lot of times we go, oh yeah, why didn't we just think of that? But I think that you're right that it's a standalone. It's weird for them to have both the music and video streaming service, but that's not Amazon does kind of the same thing. If anything, Amazon's is more confusing because you get some stuff with Prime and some stuff is separate. I'm super curious about the idea of a backlog. I think you're right that they need something to flesh out the service, but the question is, how do you pick and what do you... Are you constantly getting new movies like Netflix or HBO?
That's what I was thinking, is that it's an HBO thing where you they have a selection of films. Like HBO's got, actually, it's got like 100 movies at any given time in its catalog, right. And they just kind of move through. They're all there for about 3 months, and then I think it is. But they come in waves, so they're like coming on and off and all that. Looking at HBO Go, I'm always surprised at what stuff they've got on there. Like when we did the Incomparable about the Batman movies, those Joel Schumacher Batman movies, those were all on HBO Go. I was like, all right, I guess.
I mean, they're Warner Brothers. Yeah, it's a super weird selection sometimes, because you'll look at it and be like, oh, there's some like really good, like new movies often come to HBO, right?
That's the bread and butter. And then they backfill with their kind of catalog. And then there's
crazy stuff that you're like, this is a terrible movie. Why is this here? And so that's
Batman
why there's
forever. It was right there.
Yeah. So it's a weird question of like, how do they make that decision? Is it just what they can afford to license? Are they looking for new stuff? Do they have some sort of like curatorial bent or angle on the stuff they're picking? Or is it just sort of a smorgasbord?
The way I pitched it, I think in my mind, was that they'll do movie catalog and they'll say, plus you get this amazing selection of the, you know, maybe even they'll say the best of the, you know, favorite films from iTunes, but now you can watch them without paying a rental fee, and they're hand selected, but in reality it's that they bought some movie streaming catalog titles from various studios and put them together in a little movie library. So it's original movies and TV, and then kind of like a movie library that you have access to without paying, which is essentially what Netflix does. Is it's got the, and HBO, but sure. Without paying extra for the per movie rental, and they just make them available. It would be. They could do it, but it would be weirder for me if they're like, also, we've got a selection of sitcoms and dramas from television that are there. That I have a harder time seeing than like original content plus a movie library.
Yeah, that is tricky unless they decided they wanted to like buy a service, which I don't think is in the offing right now.
Yeah, I mean... If there was a small service, I could see it. I could see them going out and basically like saying, we're going to buy the Turner Classic Movies streaming service.
Right.
And just put all of those on our platform. And we're going to go buy the, you know, I don't know what else is out there. We're going to go buy
some sort of weird deal with like... you can buy HBO and Showtime as like add-ons through Amazon or through Hulu these days. So I wonder if that'll be an option. Like,
well,
you'll be able to.
You can buy those on the Apple TV now, though, right?
Right. I wonder if there'll be some sort of discounted deal or something, possibly. I don't know. I just wonder, like, if they're, again, what do you use to get people in the door? I think the name thing, as you point out, is that's a tricky one because I agree with you that Apple TV seems like the best name. But oh my God, is it already so confusing to have to use the TV app on my Apple TV connected to my TV?
Like, I know.
That is just too, there's too much there. And yet it is the best option.
Right?
It's easy to see that the TV app itself has already been primed for something like this.
Yeah.
It's not hard to imagine them to how they could extend that to incorporating their own streaming service, mm-hmm. as well as pulling in the stuff that it currently gets from other apps. But, you know, it's also a question of, well, TV also suggests TV content. And if they've got movies on there as well, like, do they want to broaden that?
But,
and, you know, as someone I saw...
But you watch it on your TV. That's the beauty of you calling it Apple TV, is that you do watch it on your TV or I guess on your device. But you're watching TV. And the fact that they've already embraced the confusing TV app is the thing that kind of ticks me over of like Apple has decided that watching movies on your iPad is TV, and that's weird, but they've already made that decision, so okay, let's go with it.
I can't remember who was saying this. I think I caught a Twitter conversation or something, but somebody pointing out that, you know, iTunes has long since outgrown music.
There's no tunes. Well, there's just some tunes, and other things are also there.
They're perfectly happy to keep calling it iTunes because of the brand name recognition, even though it's got way more than just music on it now.
And they seem to want to define watching TV as being watching, you know, pre-produced, purchased, or streamed video on your devices.
Right. Like, as opposed to like going to the movie theater, right? Like,
exactly.
Going to the movies versus watching home video. I mean, home video sounds ridiculous.
Right.
You know, people, the obvious analog would be something like Apple Video. It just...
Boy, that doesn't excite, does it?
It doesn't sound great. I could totally see them doing it, but
and TV,
it doesn't sound great.
TV has the same meaning as phone in a way, right? Which is they're trying to redefine it. But I think they could get away with it. I think they can get away with it. They're certainly trying to say, oh, it's TV. It's TV. All those movies that you rent, it's TV. They're in the TV app. Which is weird, but it's like, but maybe that's the redefinition of it, is watching personal video outside of a movie theater is TV now, instead of it being on a TV set. And that's just how it is. I don't know. I mean, calling it Apple TV is a shot in the dark. I would give its percentage chance as being like 15% or 20%, mm-hmm. if that. Yet I think it is the one that I like the best of all of them, and I think that it's all of them are in the between 1% and 10% chance at this point of all of the other ones that I've considered, because there is no clear service name out there. Now, I should say, it's possible that they'll just roll this into Apple Music, although I feel like they can't keep the name. And a lot of people out there, I'm surprised at how many people just assume they'll put it in Apple Music because Planet of the Apps and Carpool Karaoke were there. But like, if you look around, the only service that is actually going to offer the complete music catalog and video streaming access is probably YouTube Red. I believe Google has said, or there have been reports that Google is planning
merging
to merge
them.
Google Play Music and YouTube Red into a single service.
I believe I've seen this. I think it is.
I'll point out YouTube Red is kind of expensive. So it's not a $10 service. It's like a $15 service. And so I do wonder about that. So that would be the analog, would be Apple saying, we're actually going to make a thing called Apple blah. And it could be, I mean, you look at YouTube Red, it could literally be Apple Elephant, right? Just like it's a word.
I was just saying, I think it'd be really funny if they called it Apple Prime and just flipped off Amazon.
Apple Blue Prime.
Yeah.
Apple Red Prime. Apple Red Prime.
Apple Red Prime.
Merry Christmas from Apple Red Prime.
Yeah, you know what? Yeah. Hey, they really need to go back to using Apple names for things. Come on. You could call it something like Apple Red Delicious.
Red Delicious. Beautiful. So anyway, people kind of assume, oh, well, it'll be all part of the same thing. But like Amazon, though they do, as you pointed out earlier, they do supply a limited catalog of music to Prime members. They have a separate unlimited music service that they sell you. And I had a couple of people say, well, you know, it really doesn't, it's really irrelevant. They do make music available to Prime members. So it's like, well, if it was irrelevant, they wouldn't have the other service that you have to pay for that has way more music on it. But as somebody who's tried to play, I now have signed up for like my Echo in the kitchen is on the one device music unlimited plan for Amazon. Mm-hmm. But before we did that, like it was so hit and miss about like, oh, play this song. I can play you 30 seconds of it. It's like, oh. Yeah.
I signed up for the $8 a month one because I don't have Apple Music. And so I was like, oh, I'll just make that my streaming service and then I can listen on the Echoes and on my phone. And that's been fine. Although when the HomePod enters the story, it's going to be trying to figure that out. It's going to be interesting because it's a question how much of that will work without Apple Music.
Not a lot, I think. So,
fortunately, my girlfriend's on a family sharing plan with her parents and has Apple Music. So I'll just use her account.
So I think it's more likely that Apple won't do something like that, but it's possible. It's possible that they will, and that would be interesting if they just kind of lumped it all together. But even then, I think it needs a new name. They're not going to call it Apple Music and have a bunch of TV shows on it.
That seems really weird. Yeah, I agree. As much as iTunes has shown that they could do that if they really want to, Apple Music has not been around so long that the brand name is hugely established.
Now, they could cheat and say, like, it's now Apple Music and TV, Apple Music and movies, Apple Music and, you know, and video or whatever. They could do that, but I don't know. Again, they could do a lot of things, but if the exercise is what do I think is, like, the most likely, I think a standalone is most likely.
Again, look at their branding over the last 5 years as they've dropped the I moniker and really just simplified, right? Like it's Apple TV, it's Apple Watch, it's Apple Music.
There's
it's
just
Apple
nouns from Apple.
Brand, yeah, basic noun. So that makes the most sense unless they've decided to pivot on their brand marketing again.
Ooh, pivot on your brand. I hate it when you pivot on the brand marketing. Ouch.
It's sharp, let me tell you. But yeah, I don't think that they are. I think that they will take the path of least resistance, probably. But we could both be surprised.
Yeah. The other entertainment story I wanted to mention is you wrote about it.
Movies Anywhere.
Yeah. So one of the great things that was like, I can't believe this service is this good, was Disney Movies Anywhere, where they, like, I think last year or maybe the year before, I signed up for that, and that's the, you know, suddenly all of the Disney-owned movies that I bought on iTunes were available on every streaming service synced together. So suddenly, like, that movie I bought on my Apple TV will now play on my Fire TV because Disney Movies Anywhere interconnected all your purchases on Amazon and iTunes and Google Play and what else?
Vudu.
Which means Vudu, which linked with Ultraviolet, which means that I had a couple of Ultraviolet movies. Anyway, and we'll get there. Anyway, so Disney Movies Anywhere obviously is such a great product that all but one of the other movie studios basically said, yes, please. And so now it's just Movies Anywhere. They made a new version of it and you can migrate your Disney account over to it. And it's got all but Paramount. And it sounds from the news reports that Paramount, they're just still haggling about terms.
Why would you want to be the one company?
The one holdout, right? But the idea and the beauty of this is, first off, Ultraviolet was terrible.
Yep.
And
I wrote a whole post on Six Colors a couple of years ago about how terrible
and the ultraviolet
it was.
Apologists came out and they're like, oh no, it's really terrible.
It's bad. It's very bad.
So it's basically dead, because the idea here is, instead of having this weird industry specific locker for your movies, and their motivator here seems to be that people are streaming so much that they're not buying movies on discs or digital.
TV
anymore.
Is also having a huge moment, and movies are probably suffering a little bit as a result of that too.
Yeah. So the idea here is maybe we could make a less consumer hostile approach to viewing movies on devices. And so the idea is, if I buy Spider-Man Homecoming on Blu-ray, and it comes with a digital code. Now the way that will work is, I'll get the Blu-ray and I put in that code in Movies Anywhere, and now Spider-Man Homecoming is also available to me on Amazon and Google Play and iTunes, like I bought it there. And it used to be like you could put in a code. Some movies would be an ultraviolet code. Some movies would be like you could choose, or, you know, ultraviolet or iTunes or something. And now it's just like you do Movies Anywhere and you get it in all of the stores that you use. Basically, all of these devices will play them. And that's either if you bought it on disc or if you just buy it on one of the stores, it goes everywhere.
That is the thing that is killer about this, is you don't even need to buy a disc. Like, this is basically said to me, there's no reason for me to buy movies on a disc anymore, honestly.
And actually, like, for me, I looked at this and I thought, well, now if there's a Blu-ray that has the digital copy, I could do the Blu-ray, because I'm going to get it everywhere and have the Blu-ray, which has higher, you know, it's higher resolution, or it's not higher resolution, it's a higher bit rate. But the fact is, the other way that they've tried to drive sales of digital downloads is by releasing the digital version weeks before the disc comes out. So I don't buy Blu-rays anymore, because I'm buying, like, I already have Spider-Man Homecoming because it came out on iTunes like 3 weeks before it came out on disc. So I just bought it.
And honestly, it's generally cheaper.
And Dan, it's in 4K, which the Blu-ray is not, because I don't have a 4K Blu-ray player, and I don't know if it's available in 4K Blu-ray. So it's like,
and
why?
The big bonus for me is I don't need to buy any more discs.
Well,
which
it's
not a small thing for a lot of us who just don't want the clutter or have small apartments, right? Yep. Like, it was a little I was telling my girlfriend about this last time. I was like, can I nerd out about this for a second? Because it's actually really cool that they made this finally work basically the way that it should have.
Should have from the beginning.
And part of it was because, you know, the market is solidified to a point where you can pick these four major players and say that basically covers 99% of movies. But she was like, oh, can we get rid of all these DVDs then? I was like, oh god, I actually wish that was a thing where I could like scan my DVD barcode and just get, like, hell, I'll take an SD copy of all these movies. That would be fine. And that's my one disappointment. There's no way to backload all these movies, because honestly, I just haven't bought that. I don't buy that many movies, period. But I certainly have not bought a lot of digital movies. I bought the Blu-rays for both the last Star Wars movies, for obvious reasons.
Sure.
Besides that, the only movies I owned that I ever bought from iTunes were... this is always my favorite example of, like, movies I own. I bought Miracle on 34th Street, which is my favorite Christmas movie.
Yeah, I bought that because we had the DVD of it, and it came out on iTunes in HD, and I was like, oh, we gotta get that.
And I didn't have the DVD of it, but I did, like, my mom had it or something. I was like, you know, I'll just buy a digital copy. I watch that enough. Like, I watch that like
every Christmas. Yeah, exactly.
And the other one was Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure, which I bought for an episode of Not Playing. And so it's like between those two and the Star Wars movies, like, you could pretty much tell my taste. But the nice part about this, as you said, was because I could link it up to my Vudu account, I got like the two movies I had in my Vudu account, which I think were Lawrence Arabia, which I was given a Blu-ray copy of,
and that's an ultraviolet,
an ultraviolet, and I'm hopeful that it's better than the crappy ultraviolet version. Well, it's iTunes version, it's at least HD.
Yeah, it'll just be the iTunes version now.
The Veronica Mars movie, because I kickstarted it, so I had a Blu-ray copy of that. So it's like, I have a weird assortment, and plus they gave you five movies free, which is also really nice. Like, and they were not terrible movies either, which was kind of refreshing.
I ended up with all these interesting movies that I didn't buy that have come by some means or other.
The one weird movie I ended up with, I was looking at my Amazon library, and this hasn't, I guess, synced over yet, but in my Amazon library, it listed all of these movies, plus somehow I ended up with a copy of Wolverine Secret Origins or whatever. Yeah.
The first Wolverine movie, which I think was free as like a streaming test or something at one point.
This is it, is that I've picked up a bunch of movies that are, if you sign up for Disney Movies Anywhere, you get a movie. If you sign up for a Vudu or Ultraviolet, you get a movie. If you sign up for this other thing, you get a movie. Also, I had a listener to The Incomparable gave me his Ultraviolet code of The Dark Knight Rises. I can't even remember why. That's when I watched The Dark Knight Rises. Well, it's in my iTunes library now, so that was weird. I bought The Amazing Spider-Man Blu-ray. That was an Ultraviolet. All of a sudden, it's, I think I actually ripped the Blu-ray and have it in Plex. All of a sudden, it's in my iTunes library. But I also got kind of weirdly, I got The Dark Knight Rises. Nicolas Cage, there's a Nicolas Cage movie that was part of the, because it had, it has no value. It was part of the Ultraviolet demo. So now that's in my library forever, which is pretty funny. What's the other one that surprised me? Oh, X-Men and X-Men Days of Future Past, neither of which I bought, are both in my library now. I don't know how that happened. Weird.
Yeah, it's Jason, weird how those
Jason
things.
Bourne in the Lego Movie, Big Hero 6, and Ice Age and Ghostbusters, those five you basically get for signing up, which is pretty wild. Like five movies that you get.
At least three of those movies are pretty good movies.
Well, I've only seen three of them, and I liked those three. So.
I've only seen two of them, but I liked both of those, and I'll probably get around to watching the other ones.
Yeah, sure.
So, yeah, I mean, usually the movies they give away free with those services are like super trash movies that you never want to watch.
Why do I have Pay It Forward and Matchstick Men in my library? Because those were giveaways from Ultraviolet.
Why do I have the X-Men Wolverine movie? I don't even want that. I will give it back.
Yeah, that's weird. X-Men Origins Wolverine.
It was definitely, I'm keying back into thinking like it was one of those things where it was, I was testing something and it was like maybe a 99-cent purchase or something. Like definitely came from either a free or really cheap purchase for some reason. And I can't remember why. But yep, well, apparently I own that. So great.
I hope Paramount gets on board though, because they're the missing studio. And I do have a bunch of Paramount movies as well. I got all the Star Trek movies, right? I'd love for them.
Right. Because the Indiana Jones movies they own the rights for too.
The other thing, I don't have any of those digital. I bought the Blu-ray.
I don't either, but I would consider buying them now, which is actually a pretty big difference.
That's
for
how
me
they
because...
get you. That's how they get. Anyway, so if you are somebody who has bought movies on any of these services or redeemed dumb codes on dumb DRM like Ultraviolets and all of that, this is not a sponsor. We don't have a sponsor, but Movies Anywhere, it's like it is a benefit to you. They want the movie studios have decided that they need to sweeten the pot at last in terms of what you get when you buy a movie or redeem a digital code. So moviesanywhere.com, you sign in, you got to log into your various accounts and they all kind of amalgamate, and then it's just kind of like magic. I mean, I had that moment where I brought when we visited my mom a few months ago, and I just threw my Fire TV stick in my bag. I didn't just because she doesn't have much in the way of beyond like just cable TV, and I was like, well, if I want to watch a movie or stream something, I'll throw this in the bag. And I got there and I opened up the movies in Amazon movie library, and I'm like, oh, all of my Disney stuff was there because of Disney Movies Anywhere. So like all the Marvel movies were there, and we ended up watching like Ant-Man or something with the kids and my mom. And that was just a great moment of like, I bought that movie on iTunes and here it is. That's pretty cool. So it's people should do it if they've got I like the consolidation of it too. It's interesting from a business standpoint, because this is the movie industry, Apple's movie content partners, saying to Apple and Amazon, quite frankly, and Google, saying, we aren't willing to let our content be part of your ecosystem, walled off ecosystem anymore. Like, right? Because for Apple, one of the arguments about buying an Apple TV is, I gotta buy an Apple TV because all my movies are on, that I bought on iTunes. And that's not true. Like, they're out of iTunes now. You could, if all you have that's keeping you on an Apple TV is 10 movies you bought or 20 movies you bought on iTunes, other than the Paramount ones, you fill in this and boom, they're on Amazon or Google. Just like
that.
It makes so much sense too, because like you think about Netflix, right? There was a point where you know, Netflix was its own sort of siloed thing, and then Netflix decided, like, basically the best business model for it was to be on every single platform, yep. which is why you can stream Netflix probably from like five different devices connected to your TV.
Totally.
And so there's no reason you shouldn't be able to do the same thing with movies that you own, in the same way that when you had DVDs, you could just take them with you and pop them into like a DVD player no matter where you were. And I think we're finally, you know, it took the movie industry a really long time to wrap their head around that. And I feel like I've never been a proponent of DRM, but I understand why companies do it. And I also understand the realities, like they're going to do it because they care so much. And like, honestly, in the streaming era, it has not been a thing that's affected me as much because it just doesn't get in my way. And so if you're gonna, as you said up top, like if you're gonna do this, make a system that's not user hostile. There's no reason for me to complain about stupid DRM restrictions when I can watch that movie on every device I own.
Yeah.
Right? I'm getting what I want. I can download and watch it offline. I can take it on my iPad, my phone, my computers, my set-top boxes. At that point, you know, basically, I think the only thing I'm missing right now is like my Xbox. It's like, I can't watch my movie on my Xbox, I guess. But well, you know, who knows? Microsoft might sign on with this at some point.
And the disc has DRM too, right? I mean, everything's sure. got DRM. Yeah. There's no way to buy a movie that doesn't have DRM at this point. So it's just different DRM. But if it's all interconnected, then it's a better buy. And that's what the movie studios want. The movie studios really want you to buy, because they still sell, even now, a lot of plastic discs in Target, mm-hmm. right? And Walmart.
Best Buy,
And what they want is for you to know when you buy that disc. And they're going to obviously have to ramp this up and put in the codes and all of that too. But I'd imagine that's happening as well as a part of this, that when you buy that disc at Target, yes, you get a code you can put in. And so you don't just get the disc, but it will pop up on your phone or your set top box or whatever. Like, you get it everywhere. That's Movies Anywhere. It is like, that's super smart. And it's pressure, because the market is soft, is causing it to happen. But the end result is positive for the people who buy movies. And that makes me happy, because I'm a person who buys movies. I do that.
Someone, that's great. Someone should tell publishers to get on this.
Yeah, wouldn't that be something? Wouldn't that be nice?
Wouldn't it be nice?
Yeah, ebooks everywhere, books everywhere.
Yeah, come on, guys.
Yeah,
figure it out.
That would be...
You're basically giving Amazon your market these days, right? Like,
yeah, that would be kind of brilliant if they said, actually, what we've come up with as the publishers is a system where you can buy a book and it'll be available in all these, on the web and in all these bookstores. The problem is Amazon is so dominant that Amazon will just be like, nope, we're not going to work with you. And then what do they do?
It's too bad that they sued the, it's too bad the government sued the crap out of Apple on that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. These things happen. I know there are some small publishers that are good about, you know, I know the folks at Angry Robot, if you buy one of their books in paper at like a con or something like that, they, I think they do give you like a code to download it or something.
That's nice.
That's nice, but you can't, it's a lot harder to do when you're distributing it in places where you aren't like face to face, right? Like, if you put a code in a book, what stops the person from going in the bookstore, finding the code, redeeming it without buying the book, right?
Books aren't shrink wrapped like DVDs are.
Exactly. Right. Exactly. And you got to start putting in those things where it's the, like you scratch it off with the coin, like a lottery ticket.
Yeah. Well, you could do, I mean, again, Amazon, I think maybe even does this where you can like, if you want, you can offer an ebook version along with a physical book. Like, if you buy the paper book, you'll get the ebook, but nobody does it. So I don't know. My favorite book edition ever is the hardcover of Lois McMaster Bujold's Cryo Burn, where they put a CD in the book that contained all but one of the previous books in the series in EPUB. That was amazing. I think their mistake was that they did it, they let people post it on the internet.
Yeah, right.
They seem to have finally like said, no, please stop. But there was a period where like legally it was okay to post it on the internet. They didn't say not to. And I get it. Like, they're trying to look, they made me into a devoted reader of that series by doing that. They did that. It worked. I've bought every book released since then, all what, three of them, but I don't know. That was maybe they went a little too far, but still kind of brilliant to just say get buy this book and you get like this digital treasure trove too. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. So
all right, well, that's a lot of talk about computers and money and entertainment, but there's a lot that's what's going on right now as we wait for the iPhone X to arrive and as we dig through I'm still digging through High Sierra stuff and you know it's that's sort of peaceful and there's some iOS 11 stuff. Things are starting to calm down a little bit. That's good from the heights of the madness of Apple release time. Thanks to everybody out there for supporting Six Colors. We really appreciate it. You help us do what we do for a living, and we are very grateful. And we hope you've enjoyed listening to us talk again about stuff like we do. But until next time, bye, Dan.
Bye, Jason.